Hello and welcome to Changing Room 4, the Championship Rugby podcast with me, Jamie Mouton, and my two friends, Sid Young and Charles Fidler. Welcome back to all our returning listeners and welcome to any new listeners. It's good to have you along. It's been quite an interesting round. Round 4 has now finished and yeah, what a round it has been. But before we get into the rugby, let's catch up quickly with Sid and Charles. Lads, how are we doing? How's your week been, Charles?
I have enjoyed a week of work. I have been chilling out, relaxing, and
acting all cool. Have you been acting all cool?
Obviously not. I am not cool. I would just like to make an apology to Coventry hooker Nick Dolly, as last week in the pod I called him Luke. So I would like to apologise. For that, I shall be putting myself on a self-administered
an awareness
shush.
Course.
No, just yeah. A shush. And I would shush, take. Okay. I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate him on his move to Leicester Tigers. So, well done, Nick.
Well done,
and
Luke.
I do apologise.
Well done, Luke.
Great job.
Oh dear. Okay, so whilst you've been reflecting on your mistake all week, Sid, what have you been up to?
I've just ate a banana. That was nice.
You just ate a banana.
I did.
That's all you've done all week.
I just ate a banana. I was more talking about recent history, but yeah, just ate a banana. I enjoyed, if it does get edited out, I enjoyed your false intro mugging off Fiddler there by your non-friend. Also enjoyed that. In reality, I've been doing a little bit of coaching in the weather, starting to warm up a little bit, almost necessitating shorts. So happy days. Just can't wait to get back to training again now. So what is it?
Yeah.
Monday is the day.
Tomorrow?
So a lot of clubs are going to be going back on Tuesday. I intend to be going back on Tuesday. I'm really excited for it. Genuinely. Unless I turn up and they start doing fucking pre-season. In April,
I saw a tweet this week from someone saying, if you're a coach, please don't be one of those coaches who turns up after 6 months off and goes, right, fitness, drills, laps, sprints, let's do it.
Exactly. Mate,
just,
honestly,
nobody wants that.
I turn up to first, it was pre-season, first pre-season of my second season at the club I was at. The first season, it was actually a mate of mine that was coaching, and he's a really sort of active in his learning, forward thinking coach like that. And so all of our pre-season was all about just playing touch with loads of space, few players, high intensity running, all that sort of shit. And then we turn up the following season, they've got this new coach in, and fuck me, he's just like this dithering old man, and he's got his shorts on. I think he had them like back to front or inside out or something like that. And I'm thinking, oh God, who have we got here now? And the bloke's like just laid out cones everywhere. And it's a myriad of cones and of all different colours. And he must have been planning this for months and months and months. And he'd been setting them out for the past hour or whatever. No balls in sight. Just cones. And I'm thinking, fucking hell, here we go.
Oh,
and then
God.
he's starting saying to us like, and he brings his kid to the adult training as well. The kid's like 14 or 15. And then he says, right, yeah, the first thing you're going to do is just 30 metre sprint, just backwards and forwards. And they're like, what is it, a 30 metre sprint one way and then a jog back? He's like, no, you just sprint between the cones for 6 minutes. I'm just like, you
takes
wanker.
The fun out of it,
you
doesn't
wanker.
It? Just
well,
takes...
You know what? Recruitment was very good that year, was it? It was fucking awful. Yeah, so coaches, if you're listening,
takes the fun out of it.
Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. Let us play.
Can we just put on record that we apologise for Sid's language, just in case it does offend anyone?
Yeah, we probably ought to.
Just a little disclaimer. Like, we don't mean to offend anyone, and sometimes they just fucking slip out, don't they?
Nah. We're on the internet. We can do what we like.
Fortunately, there is a little label that I have to tick whenever I'm uploading the podcast that says clean or explicit. And obviously, I've never gone clean yet.
Okay.
So, yeah, they've had fair warning. But there we go.
12A rating.
12A rating, indeed.
Damn on.
Scores from this week's game then. So, first up, the game that I attended. I was doing coverage for BBC Jersey and BBC Three Counties Radio.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Check
moving up in the world.
Tell me about it. I even got some proper kit and a microphone this week. I just have to call in on my phone. So that was all good. So yeah, Bedford Jersey was the first match of the weekend at Goldington Road. Bedford scored 20 points to Jersey's 25, getting their first win of the season there. Next up was what turned out to be a bit of a low scoring thriller, I think you described it as, Sid. Doncaster 17, Cornish Pirates 15, that was at Castle Park up in the north. Next match was Nottingham against Coventry. Nottingham, unfortunately, still unable to salvage much from this season at the moment. 24-36 to Coventry there. Today then we had Richmond hosting Saracens. Put up quite a good showing by the looks of it. I didn't get to see it, but again, I think you watched it, didn't you, Sid? So, Richmond 3, Saracens 32. And then we've just finished. We've just had the Ealing-Hartbury game finish. And wow, what a mammoth score. Ealing just seemingly unstoppable at the moment. 75 points to 19 at home there. Quite the score. So, running through the table then, that leaves, quite obviously, Ealing at the top on 20 points. Doncaster just behind them, still unbeaten, worth mentioning, on 17. Cornish Pirates on 15 in third. Saracens move up to fourth on 10. Coventry just behind them on the same score. Bedford on 6. Amptill on the same in 7th place. Then in 8th place, Hartbury RFC on 5. Jersey in 9th on 4. Richmond in 10th on 4. And Nottingham in last place at the moment with 1 point.
So Doncaster have 17 points, Pirates have 15 points. And what was the score?
Oh, and it was 17-15. That's spooky. Spooky. Yes. There we go. What a twist of fate that is. All right, so let's go through them. Let's start at the top. Bedford Jersey then. I don't think either of you guys managed to see it, did you? But Jersey with their first win. It was quite an interesting game, actually. I enjoyed it. It was I tell you what, it's always colder at rugby grounds than you think it's going to be. I went there with a hat and gloves and thick coat and thought, yeah, I'll be all right. This should be enough. Definitely wasn't.
Did they not stash you out?
No, they didn't stash me out. Didn't stash me out, unfortunately. But yeah, so Jersey got off to a good start in that game. Kept the pressure on Bedford for a good almost half an hour. Kept them inside their own half most of the time. Bedford had a man sent to the sin bin on 21 minutes, I think it was. And that was just team penalties. We've mentioned Bedford's indiscipline before, and this, it seems to be a running theme.
Interestingly, on that, Jamie, and sorry to get really boring, but that's Bedford now have had 8 yellow cards across their 4 games. So obviously, averaging
8. I thought it was only 7.
No, they've had 8. They had another 3 this weekend.
They had three this week. Yeah.
3 in the first week, and then they've had 1 across the other 2 fixtures. So you know, it's something that we've raised before, but it's a real issue for them because that's a tight game that actually they could probably have come on the other end of the result and maybe snuck a win if all 15 stayed on the pitch. But to have 3 yellow cards...
Well, I know. No, they definitely made it difficult for themselves.
I'll see you're boring, Fiddler, and I'll not raise you more boring because that'd be far too exciting. I'll give you something else. Some international boring. If I'm right, it's just something that I saw from, I think, 2000 until 2020 or something like that, or maybe 2010 till 2020, something like that. There's only ever been 5 red cards in the entire Six Nations, like over a decade or over 2 decades or whatever it was. And in this Six Nations, there was 5 red cards. So is it something that's down to the championship or is it something that's just down to modern rugby? People playing on the edge?
Well, interestingly,
there's more.
I interviewed Alex Ray, the Bedford head coach, after the game. I was told Mike Rea was unavailable. Apparently he doesn't do media after a loss. So, interviewed Alex Rea after the game, and his immediate reaction when I put that question to him, you've had quite a few yellow cards now, what do you think's going on? His immediate reaction was, ask the referees, I don't know why they give them sometimes. I don't know. It could be, they might be hotter on something, maybe it's something Bedford haven't quite woken up to yet, but although he to be fair to him, he did then go back and kind of say, we do need to be a bit hotter on our discipline, though. So, because they're not helping themselves out at the moment with that kind of record. It did mean that we ended up with a period of uncontested scrums at one point. It was quite a bit of a farce. So there in the second half, then the tight head prop got Ed Prowse. He got sin binned. And then his replacement, Rob Hardwick, came on, promptly got sin-binned. So both tight head props suddenly off the field, had to go to uncontested scrums. And as a result, Bedford also had to sacrifice a third man because it was their fault that we were uncontested scrums. So it was 12-on-15 at one point for about 3-4 minutes, which just, it seemed mad. There was quite a long pause whilst they tried to work out what was going on, but... That was Bedford, really. Jersey, however, to give them credit where it's due, they did keep the pressure on. That first half, they kept the pressure on really, really well. Kept Bedford pinned in their own half. Kept opting for the line-out from the penalties, which was interesting calls, but it did work for them because they did get two tries off the back of the ball after the line-outs. So, they kept the pressure on and they kept the work rate up in the defence, and it paid off for them in the end. And they just managed to push it out of Bedford's reach with their third try. So, yeah, it was a good game. A well-deserved win for Jersey. A difficult one for Bedford.
I think for me, just quickly, it was nice to see a little bit of ambition, though, from Bedford. And I point out Ryan Oluwafela's try, where they went coast to coast.
That was a good try.
In their own 22.
You can't mention that try without mentioning the break from Ruben Bertullock, though.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know, in fairness to Jersey, the defensive line came up quick, but to be able to break through that tackle in the centre, and then it was just a brilliant piece of support. Once Ruben Bertullock was through, had the men outside him, and it was then just a very easy stroll for Ryan Oluwafela, who just put the gas on. And it was just nice to see a little bit of ambition. And then obviously Rich Lane's try as well, you know, attacking the
down
blind
the other
side.
Wing. Two breakaway tries. Yeah. They did take their opportunities when they were given to them, but to be fair, there weren't many opportunities given. So Jersey did well to come away and get that win, get that first win in the season off the back of two disappointing results previously. Doncaster against Cornish Pirates then. Sid, you watched this one. What did you make of it?
Yep, spent my tenner. You know, done the good thing. Support your teams, everyone. Yeah. Support your teams. Some delightful coverage. Some delightful coverage from Castle Park. Some really good insights. They had a player commentating as well. It was really good. Gave some good views as well, and gave some good insight into the team dynamic, etc. But the big takeaway from me for that game is an extension of what I said, I think it was last week, about Doncaster Knights. In my opinion, they are the cleanest, most precise, sharpest playing team in the championship. Whenever they have ball in hand, there's sort of no scrambled attack. People talk about scrambled defence, but you often see scrambled attack as well. It just seems like everyone is on the same page in every single attack they make. And a lot of their attacks tend to be shorter. They don't wait and wait and wait and go through plenty of phases and wait to get messy, basically. They're pretty keen to go for riskier plays. So it's all controlled pretty well by Sam Ulver at 10, and they'll often go for kicks, and they'll go, you know, for kicks the space or kicks, you know, all the way to the in goal area, which is chased so well by the likes of Jack Spittle, who I also mentioned last week. But then, you know, that whole back line, there's just so much effort from them all the way around and from the forwards as well. It's a real team effort. And I think that's a big nod to the coaches. You know, I think that they've really put some thought into it and how they want to play. People say about, you know, defining your style of play or whatever. I think Doncaster have got a really evident style of play, and I think they're executing it well. And it goes some way to explaining why we asked the question a couple of weeks ago about this ability for Doncaster to only go just a little bit ahead of their opponents. It might be because of this style of play, this riskier style of play. But I think as the weather gets warmer and as the grounds, you know, harden up, I think it's only going to open up the possibilities for more of that hard running attacking play. And so it should benefit Doncaster in the long run, I think. The end of it was so exciting. I thought that was great. It was so entertaining.
So talk me through it. I didn't manage to see the end.
Yeah.
Well, so I didn't manage to see any of it. So talk us through what happened.
Yeah. So the game was super tight. You know, the whole way through there was only one try apiece at halftime. Maybe one team. It must have been one try apiece at halftime. And there was, I think, 2 points in it, if not 1 point. And then by the, like, 78th minute, Pirates were up by 15-14. To Pirates with 1 minute to go. Doncaster gets a penalty right in front of the post, just outside of the 22. They slot that to bring it to 17-15. They've got to play the restart. They play the restart only a couple of phases later, just out, you know, a little bit outside the 22 again. Pirates win their own penalty. And so they've got a kick, but it's a fair old angle. You know, it's beyond the 15 metre. They put that one wide. Doncaster don't get off easy there, though. They have to keep playing a little bit longer and eventually get possession back and then kick it out for the win for 17-15. So it was a real nail bite.
Tense finish.
Yeah, came right down to the end. So yeah, it was really exciting. It's good stuff. Really entertaining rugby.
Yeah, definitely. Disappointment for Cornish Pirates, though, who have now, what's the word? They've forfeited their unbeaten record.
Yeah, really disappointing. And they were so close as well. It's you know, much like the... Oh, let's not talk about that for too long. But much like that Scotland-France game, it was so close either way. It was, you know, it was one kick in it. And, you know, if they had a stroke of luck or a gust of wind, it could have gone the completely different way. And they'd be on the bus home and they'd be in a completely different mood. And the post-match interviews would be saying, you know, how proud they are of the boys. And, you know, they prepared really well for it to come away with a win. But, you know, that's just how it goes. That's rugby, that's sport. You have the highs and the lows. And unfortunately, they were on the wrong side of it. But maybe that's the kick in the teeth that they need. And they'll come back next week or in a couple of weeks. Maybe even stronger. Who knows? Shame for you, Fiddler. You're second team and all.
Yeah, very disappointing. Very disappointing indeed.
Oh, don't encourage it.
Obviously, we're rooting for them. But, you know, as you say, it was a really close game. And, you know, neither team really deserved to lose, did they? And
no.
But Doncaster took their chances. You know, Cornish Pirates had that penalty right at the end of the game to sneak the win, but didn't quite make it. You know, I just think it's going to be hard for them now to try and bounce back because they have to travel to Ealing. So that is Cornish Pirates' next fixture, which I'm sure will be a decent game. And I think as well, at this point, I'd also like to sort of... we didn't speak about this last week, and it's something that I feel that we should have done, which is why we love rugby. Is the fact that Cornish Pirates have a sin bin, which is a seat made out of a bin.
The big biffer bin. The cutout.
And that highlight image, of the week.
I think, round of applause.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so following that, obviously those images of Joe Atkinson, the Bedford back rower, who had been sin binned, you know, the pictures of him sitting in the bin, did the rounds, and I think that, you know, highlights just how fantastic rugby as a sport is. And we see the funny side of things. So on that, I would like to congratulate the social media team at Doncaster for their post-match tweet regarding try scorer John Kelly. And they tweeted it in the style of the Mika song Grace Kelly. And the line went, "We scored a try like John Kelly." And I think that's fantastic. So I think if we could, I think we need to join forces with Doncaster, do a remix, get it out there, and we can all go and score tries like John Kelly. I scored a try like John Kelly. See, brilliant. Fantastic. That is my sort of highlight of the week, and some excellent wordplay by the team up at Doncaster. So well done, lads and lasses.
Let's move on to the Nottingham Coventry match then. More difficulties, more strife for Nottingham. Home match against Coventry. Yeah, it wasn't going their way for a long time. I think at half time they still had either nil or relatively few points on the board.
21-7 managed to pull it at half time to Coventry.
Right. Managed to pull it back a bit in the second half. But still, the damage was done, and Coventry ran away with a bonus point win. Thoughts on Nottingham? Thoughts on Coventry?
I think that Nottingham, again, we speak about it quite a lot, but I think it's so unique and a big factor that teams do need to take into account. This idea of no relegation this year and the free shot. Like, Nottingham are scoring points. Then they're not getting completely walked over, but they're not getting the wins. And so you've got to look at what you can do in these few remaining games, what you can do differently. And I'm just a sort of example and a comparison. I'm not saying take this strategy, but go the old Italy versus England in the Six Nations attitude. You remember when they started running around the ruck? Was that Conor O'Shea years? And everyone didn't know what was going on. I'm not saying do that, but they just tried something completely different. Nothing to lose. You know, at the moment they're just going through these games and they're taking losses, but they're still scoring points and they're going, "Oh, we did okay." You know, if I was a coach on that team, yeah, I'd be just looking at trying something completely different, completely new, and looking at different ways to batter these teams. You know, something different to throw at them, make them react to you. Let them look at your film and all your tapes from all your previous matches or whatever, and throw something completely different at them.
On the plus side, something was clicking because they did come back. They scored four tries. They got their first point of the season, bonus point.
So absolutely.
The attack seems to have something about it.
And this is my point exactly. It just goes to show that the players are not the problem. The players and the skill and, you know, their talents, that's not the problem. It's just how they're being utilized. So then it's the coaching staff's job to say, right, how do we unleash that to the best of our abilities?
Well, we don't know if they're not the problem. Thinking objectively, just their defence, they might all be terrible defenders. I mean, they're obviously not. They're playing the Championship, but
no. But but if you play one half, and then you've only scored one try or whatever it was, and you know you're at your 7 points, and then within the 10-15 minutes, someone says, "Right, let's try this." Make a tactical plan, and then, you know, forget about however many they're conceding or whatever. Against the same set of defenders, you're now putting on another three tries. It just shows that they're capable of adapting well. And so with that, I would go for, rather than a short-term game plan change there, I'd go for a longer-term game plan change.
I think for me, I don't think there's too much to be disappointed about. Obviously, they'll be annoyed at the loss, but to come back from, you know, 21-24-7 down at half time to then secure a four try bonus point, and then they just couldn't quite complete the comeback. I think, you know, it shows that something is obviously working. I think, you know, there might be things that they need to improve defensively, but offensively it seems to be that they're in a good place. You know, they do seem to be picking up tries, and obviously this bonus point for four tries this weekend is, I think, testament to that. You know, I think it's difficult for them still because, you know, as we've alluded to previously, you know, their first game was away at Ealing, or at home against Ealing. Then they had the bye. Then they had a tricky trip down to Ampthill. They just haven't been able to get that consistency and build into their performances. And I think what we're seeing now is, you know, they put points on Ampthill. They scored a few more points again this week. You know, I think they're building, and I just think they're finding their feet. It's been difficult with no pre-season, and I do think that that's just natural. It's just, you know, a bit of match fitness coming back into the legs and just getting that muscle memory back in place. And I think they are building towards, you know, a strong end to the season. And then on the flip side, you look at Coventry. You know, their pre-match preparation was highly disrupted. Obviously, we spoke about my friend Nick Dolly, or Luke Dolly as I wrongly call him, but you know, during the week he was probably set to take the two jersey again. You know, three tries in three games, obviously been playing well, but Leicester Tigers have now snapped him up. So Suva Massey coming in as the reserve hooker was named to start, drops out before the game because he fails a fitness test, and the guy that comes in, Jordan Poole, who probably wasn't expecting to start the game, starts the game, picks up two tries. So you know, to do that, you know, for Coventry to have to go through all of that sort of pressure at the start because, you know, you've gone through all your plans and then those plans have had to change pre-kickoff. For them to go and score, was it five tries in the end?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and win a game away from home, I think they'll be absolutely delighted. And the fact that, you know, Jordan Poole's come in as third choice hooker and scored two tries in his first start, you're probably thinking, actually, we're now building some brilliant squad depth. So, you know, I think Coventry will probably look at this and say, right, that's another building point that, you know, especially going from that first half against Ealing the week before, where they held them to 12 all, it just seems that they're now building those performances that I think will come from Nottingham.
Right, so bonus question for you. If these teams are building, if Nottingham's building, if Coventry's building, are they building in this 10-game season, are they building to be genuine contenders for the, you know, for the title this year? Or are they using this as a, you know, a 10-game long stepping stone toward building for next year? And remember, so they've got no relegation. So even if they, you know, experiment, try new things, they can't be demoted. And next year, we won't have, if we go by this assumption, we won't have a Saracens team in the Championship who would be widely touted to be the dominant force come finals time.
That's assuming Saracens are the ones that go up, though.
I think that's what Sid is assuming, yeah. I mean, we're playing devil's advocate here that we're saying that Saracens will go up, but just for sake of argument. But for me, in terms of the question...
For sake of argument.
You know, in terms
okay.
of Nottingham...
We've just lost all our Ealing listeners.
No, just for the sake of argument, the fact that we're talking about Nottingham and Coventry and building, I think they're using this season as a real opportunity to hone their craft at this level and look at getting a consistency of performance ready for next year. I think they're using this 10-game season as a bit of a one-off and said, right, we've got 10 games to, as you say, Sid, try things, do things that they perhaps might not do because that threat of relegation has been taken away. So I think they're using it to build ready for next season. So when next season's here and the competition is back and we have relegation and promotion, I think that's what they're working towards and being in a strong position to be able to compete next season.
Let's talk about Richmond versus Saracens then. Reminder of the score, Richmond 3, Saracens 32 at the Richmond Athletic Ground. Surprising scoreline for me. I was expecting a much more one-sided affair there with quite a higher scoreline for Saracens, if I'm perfectly honest. So for me, I think Richmond have done really well to keep them down to 30-ish points.
Yeah, so I watched the game. Richmond actually were up. They were 3-0 up, which they would have been dead pleased with. But that actually stayed that way. You know, it stayed really tight for the majority of the first half. And that's when Saracens just started to pull away. But as you say, that final score, 32-3, you know, Richmond will be pretty happy with that, bearing in mind you had Jamie George on the field, you had Sean Maitland on the field, you had Vincent Cock, World Cup winner, on the field against you. Even people like, you know, like Mike Rhodes and stuff like that. Super, super high performing players. They'll be pretty pleased with that score, I reckon. And also, you know, it just seemed to be the agreed sentiment that that scoreline doesn't even really reflect the match. It just always felt like Richmond were in it. It just felt competitive and it felt close. I think what really pulled them apart, though, I don't want to keep banging on about the same point, but Richmond's penalty count in the second half was just through the roof. But again, who knows? Maybe this is just a I don't want to say tactic, but a bit of a game plan in terms of, you know, just don't let them get over the line on the first opportunity, even if it means giving away penalties and maybe these yellow cards, which there were a few of, make them really work for it. The, you know, in all likelihood, they are going to get over the line a few times. So, yeah, really make them work for it there. Saracens, some standout performances. Standout appearances, I think, is a more appropriate word. First of all, massive congratulations to Ralph Adams-Hale, who came back for his first game since 2019, where he had a pretty horrific injury, ankle injury. He's obviously at prop, goes into the scrum. Scrum moves backwards, his boots don't. And that's how the ankle gets broken. So that was pretty nasty, and now he's back on the field, and he came back on and scored. So great news for him. Also, people like Andy Christie, who got a try as soon as he came on the field as a substitute. He was looking really good. He had a couple of really powerful runs, really light on his feet still, though. Powerful back row player. Cutting some intelligent lines into gaps near the breakdown. Looked really, really sharp. Those young boys coming through, it just looks like they're working so hard on their bodies as well. They look really filled out, and they look like they can really contest now with those experienced players. So yeah, hopefully we'll see more of them in the championship year, and hopefully they'll come on as players.
In your eyes, then, Sid, yeah. did Richmond restrict Saris, or were Saris not playing to their full potential?
Yeah, a little bit of
because
both.
Because nobody, I don't think anybody would have predicted that Saris would only score 32 points against Richmond, who have just come up from League One. And
yeah.
if you saw the social media, saw the tweet, all part-time players. They've all got jobs, other things that they're doing around rugby.
Yeah.
Whereas Saracens are professional players, only do one thing.
Yeah, that was great. We'll get that put out on our socials. Check that out. It's Richmond's real FA Cup vibe post of what all the players' occupations are. But yeah, despite that, I was going to say it was a little bit of both, a little bit of Saracens maybe not playing to the best of their abilities, but Richmond, especially in the forwards, I think, really did contain Saracens. You know, this was off the back of a performance last week by Miles Scott, back row player, who also shifted into the second row. He got man of the match last week. Big Sexy. His nickname being
sorry,
really, his nickname's Big Sexy, and like I was watching some interviews and stuff,
right?
And it was the fellow was just approaching him saying, "Oh, Big Sexy, oh yeah, great game." And I just thought it was really, you know, really casually used. I thought that was a close friend thing.
Is it an accurate nickname? That's what everybody wants.
Of course it is. But players like him were putting in real big performances. And as I said, some superstar names in that forward pack, as well as some really strong young lads. And, you know, they were putting up a real good show. There was so many 5-metre lineouts, which is where I think the first try came from. But especially in the second half, you know, even when they were down a man and stuff like that, Richmond were competing and they were just not letting that maul through, which was really impressive. Super, super impressive. So, you know, Richmond, that's the score. But look, talk about that. Talk about that in your clubhouse and be really proud of it. Sarries will be pleased with the win, but I'm sure Richmond will be pleased with the performance. Well done, both teams.
Moving on to our last match of the round then. Ealing Trailfinders 75, Hartbury RFC 19. What do we make of that? What can you make of that?
Well, just a continuation of a theme, really, isn't it? We must be sound like we're playing a broken record. But, you know, it's another case of is this the time that Ealing make it? Do they do it? Do they finally get across the line and they make it to the Premiership? I mean, that's essentially what it is. If you look at the performances, you know, it's their fourth 50-plus score, 11 tries today. You know, it's just a case now where I think they've got to a stage where they're probably too good for the Championship. I'm, you know, just going to put it out there.
It seems that way. So
here's a question then. For the past 3 weeks, I've been saying Ealing would be really annoyed because they keep doing so well, but Saracens will just smash it in that final game and then get the promotion.
I think you've been jumping the gun. I'm just a man asking questions. Well,
is this the time when we say are they contender? You know, are they going to put up the fight against Saracens? Is this real? You know, is it going to happen?
Yes. And me as a Saracens fan, am I worried? Yes. Because, and I will tell you for why. Because if you look at, I'm going to use England in the Six Nations as the example. If you look at the fact that the England team was predominantly, had its Saracens core there, and it was made up of players like Elliot Daly, Owen Farrell, and, you know, Itoji, Jamie George. They just looked off the pace, didn't they? They looked a little slower. They looked a little bit more unfit. They just weren't match ready. And I don't know how Saracens are going to manage that group of England players throughout the rest of the season. But if they just sort of drop them into games here and there, you know, Jamie George played today. Does he play next week? Or does Capelli Pifoletti come back in? You know, however they manage it. But if they're not playing games, this Ealing side, it pretty much picks itself, and it's been a very balanced side. They haven't made many changes throughout the 4 weeks. A lot of clubs, I think, in round four, this is where they started making a few more changes if you look at some of the team selections. But Ealing are pretty much, you know, most of the guys have played four or three games. You know, there's a couple that have played all four. You look at the captain, Rain Smith, you know, he's now in the, I would put him in the Sam Simmons category, you know. He's top of the try-scoring charts, five of four games. He's up there with Ben Foley from Hartbury, you know, who's a winger. So we've got that kind of scenario now where we've got a Sam Simmons-esque character. You know, you've got others there. Simon Azokwe scored again today. Another powerful back row player. We've been talking a lot about some back row players, but it also seems they've got the strength out in the back line as well. And they welcome back Max Bodley today. Very much like the Ralph Adams-Hale situation's been out for a long time with injury, back today, two tries. One was a nice intercept as well. So, you know, he's straight back into being match fit and match ready and really sort of understanding what's happening on in terms of game management. But you look at James Cordy Redding, Angus Kernahan, you know, David Johnston at fullback. These guys are playing regularly, and I just think if they keep playing like this, I think, you know, by the time it comes to that final and the chemistry that those guys have got, will that edge out a team that sort of plays a bit part process?
Time off. Next round. So obviously there's a break for Easter. Nobody's playing over Easter, so a nice little break for everybody to go and regroup. And
so does that mean we're not? There's not going to be a pod next week?
We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see, Charles. We'll
give the people what they want.
We'll see how it goes during the week, if we think there's anything worth listening to that we can come up with. So let's preview 2 weeks' time. Or let's recap the scores from our predictions from last week.
I don't think we need to, really. I'm pretty sure.
I think we need to.
I can never remember what I predicted.
I think we should. So Charles and Sid, you both boringly went for the same teams. And therefore got the exact same score of 3 out of 5.
Oh, it's better than I was expecting.
I'll take it.
I went one different from you. I decided to try and shake it up just a little bit. I'd choose Doncaster instead of Pirates, and it paid off. So I got 4 out of 5.
Well
Yay
done.
Me!
Well done. Congratulations.
Yay me! Thank you very much. I think I've won that for the last two or three weeks now.
So nice.
You two need to up your game. Anyway, let's have a look at the fixtures for the week after Easter. Cornish Pirates against Ealing Trailfinders.
Ealing.
I don't think that's really in doubt. However, Cornish Pirates have a record as giant killers, don't they? So.
And they're Fiddler's favourite team.
It's Fiddler's favourite team.
And I've just voted against them.
I know. It's shocking. Absolutely shocking. Jersey Reds at home, although not really at home, so at Castle Park against Doncaster. Sid.
Doncaster, I've been singing their praises all this episode, and I think they're going to execute again. Go Knights.
Charles?
I'm going to go with Jersey.
Really? Interesting.
Can Doncaster keep it going? Jersey have got a bit of a free hit at it. I think, you know, they're building performances as well. Beat Bedford away. Not an easy place to go and pick up a win. You know, that was Bedford's first loss at home in 19 games or something. I read something somewhere on their Twitter that it was the first time they've been beaten at Goldenson Road since 2019 or something. So, obviously not an easy place to go. So, I'm going with Jersey.
Okay, so you're going Jersey. Despite being quite impressed by Jersey this week, I'm going to go for Doncaster. I think they'll probably continue that. I think the travel is taking its toll. Certainly, their head coach, when I interviewed him, or director of rugby even, Harvey Billion, he said that it's definitely taking a toll, so I think they're going to struggle a bit with that at the moment, having to travel twice as much as any other team. Who's next? Harpre at home at the Alpass Arena against Nottingham. Charles?
This is a tough one. I'm not too sure. For me, it's a bit of a flip of the coin situation. I think Nottingham are building, as are Harpre, but I'm going to go with a home win.
Okay. Harpre. Sydney?
Yeah, again, that is a tough one. But on this sort of flip of a coin idea, I am going to go Nottingham. This idea of doing one different from Fiddler seems to have worked for you, so I'm going to go for that. Maybe Nottingham will change up their game plan and see what happens. I'm going to go Nottingham win.
I think Hartbury put in a good showing against Ealing. Nottingham, they also put a good showing in against Coventry, but like Charles, I'm going to go with Hartbury. I think home advantage there. And yeah, they're probably just that step ahead of Nottingham at the moment. Saracens at home against Bedford Blues. Sid?
Saris.
Fids?
Saris. What are you going for?
The Saracens are going to get various England and British and Irish Lions back, aren't they? So I'm also going to go Saris. Don't think there's much looking past that. And then the final match is Coventry at home at Butts Park Arena against Ampthill, who have just had a bye week and just going into a second week off. Whether that's going to influence things, I think it might. I think it might be just a little bit of not quite match fitness. So then add in the element of travel as well. Yeah, I'm going to go Cov for that.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. They've had a bye. They're off next week as well. It's been a bit of a disjointed start for them. So for me, Coventry win.
Okay, Sid?
Yeah, I've not got much to add to that. Coventry will feel comfortable at home, and they've been putting in some good work so far this season. So yeah, Coventry.
Okay. Well, I'm pleased to see that we haven't all gone for the same teams. So nobody's got an exact same prediction sheet as anybody else. So, yeah, should be a little bit more interesting then.
Last play.
Last play then, Sid. What have you got for us?
Right. First off, I'd just like everyone to not look so dejected when we introduce last play. Let's just try that again.
What do you mean?
I don't know, a bit of fanfare, a bit of drum roll or something.
That gets added in the edit.
Oh, well, I actually want that.
What we need, right, it's just come into my head, right? So we know we've got the I Scored a Try Like John Kelly remix.
Yeah.
Why not More Than an Ealing remix?
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
I'm not sure how that fits into anything.
We could come up with all kinds.
So I think there's a market. We're all over this remix stuff. We could create a Green King IPA Championship album.
Maybe there's a game in that. Maybe there's a last play in that.
Let's focus on today's one.
Okay, So Sid's last play. This week, I thought Nottingham were having a bit of a tough time with it all. I thought we've not spoke a whole lot about Nottingham. All we've spoke about is Nottingham's troubles. Maybe they're not really feeling the love from us. So I've put together something specifically for Nottingham. It's basically a true or false game on facts or fictions about Nottingham, the town, the rugby club, the football club, the county, history, etc., etc. Okay?
Nice.
Super duper easy. Straightforward. Okay?
Right. Let's do it.
How many questions?
10. I will record your scores. Okay.
And then a tiebreaker.
I have a tiebreaker. Question one. Nottingham rugby related. Nottingham RFC. Nottingham, the town, city, whatever, of birthplace of Robin Hood. The chairman is called Alistair Bow, as in bow and arrow. True or false? Fiddler.
False. This is really going to test our knowledge, isn't it?
False.
Fiddler, false. Jamie?
True.
Jamie, 1-0. True. His name is Alistair Bow. Jamie, 2. Nottingham native Jake Bugg, who you'll know from music, played for Nottingham Forest Academy football team as a youngster. True or false?
I'm going to go true.
Fiddler?
Yeah, I was going to say true as well. Stuff like that always tends to be correct, doesn't it?
You're both wrong. That's false. I made it up. musician, not an athlete. Hello, Jake. Fan of the show. 3. All Bramley apples are descended from the same tree in Nottingham. True or false?
True.
Fiddler, true. Jamie?
False.
That is true.
Get in, is it?
That is true. Fiddler's got one. Fiddler's on the score sheet. A tree in Southwell, wherever that is.
That's a great bit of knowledge, that, by the way.
I like that you're guessing that it might be false, though. I might have come up with that. That's niche.
Oh, that's a good point. I'd forgotten that you were coming up with the false facts. So, that's going to have to factor into That's going to factor into my decisions a bit more now.
Okay.
Is Sid intelligent enough to have come up with this ridiculous thing?
That is the question you've got to ask. What am I on for? Nottingham was originally called Snottingham.
That just sounds exactly like the kind of thing that you would have come up with. Like we're just saying.
Jamie, you're going first for this one.
Oh, can I? False.
False.
It's one of those things that just sounds too good to be not true. So I'm going to say it's true.
It's true.
Oh man,
it's true. Strictly speaking, it's Snottingham. The person who ruled the place was called Snot, and so it was Snottingham. So okay. Yeah, there you go. Who knew?
Cheers.
Hello to all of our Nottingham based listeners. I'm sure know all of this. Fact or fiction number 5. Mahatma Gandhi's nephew went to Nottingham Uni.
I think Fiddler. That's one of yours. I think that's one of yours. I think that's false.
I'm also saying false.
You're both wrong, it's true.
Oh, for God's sake.
Not only did his nephew go there, but Mahatma Gandhi visited the uni in 1931.
Oh. Okay.
Number six. There are over 700 caves in the streets, under the streets of Nottingham. They are haunted by the ghost of a murder victim. However, less menacingly, the victim was the caretaker of the caves when they had already become a tourist attraction. Murdered in 1952, and his name is Gary. So he's colloquially known as Gary the Ghost.
This is so convoluted.
True. I don't even know if it's me going first. I'm sorry, but I'm going with true.
I'm going to go... Oh, so convoluted. Like, could you have possibly made that up? Oh, true.
It's false. I did make it up.
For God's sake.
There are 700 caves, though. 700 caves under the streets of Nottingham, but they're not haunted by a ghost called Gary.
Right.
So I've still got the score at 2-1 to Fiddler, by the way.
Lovely.
Number seven. Place names in Nottinghamshire include Cockshut Lane, Beaver Place and Willy Lane.
True.
Yeah, true. Well done. So you both got one there. 3-2 to Fiddler. 8. You can hire a tribute rock band for weddings, birthdays, bar mitzvahs, all the rest of it, called Not the Rolling Stones. Not obviously spelt with two T's, short for Nottingham. Nottingham-based Not the Rolling Stones is available for hire.
Is this a Jamie question? Is this an Eben?
This is 8, so
it's
Jamie
you,
first.
I think.
No, oh, this is number 8, oh. Jamie first, yeah.
Oh, false.
True.
False. True. That's false, I made it up.
Yes!
So Jamie gets one there, so it's 3-3 with 2 questions to go. Okay, number 9. Shin pads were invented in Nottingham.
False.
Jamie?
Oh, I know there's a game, there's a like sport of shin kicking, which is a traditional English sport where they stuff straw down their trousers and stuff and just kick the shit out of each other. I'm going to say true.
Jamie takes that one. It was true.
Yes.
Jamie takes the lead.
Oh, a late surge.
Oh, a question late number 10. If you've ever wanted one to make you doubt your own existence, then this is it.
Brilliant.
US rapper Lil Jon owns a pub in Nottingham called the Robin Hood. This is his only UK owned business. Robin Hood and Lil Jon. So the Robin Hood is owned by US rapper Lil Jon. One of the, I assume, many pubs in Nottingham called the Robin Hood. Even number, Jamie, you go first. Does Lil Jon own a pub in Nottingham called the Robin Hood?
No, he doesn't.
False.
I've never even heard of a rapper, Lil Jon, but I'm going to go.
Well, he's the one that goes yeah on Usher. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
That guy.
Oh, that changes everything. Yeah, well, now Charles has heard of him. Of course he has. Yeah, he must do.
It definitely sounds like the kind of guy that would like to own a pub called the Robin Hood in Nottingham.
It's a marketing dream.
Yeah.
If you're called Lil Jon, you're going to own a pub called the Robin Hood.
I'm going to say true.
Jamie's going false. Yeah, that's false. I made it up.
Yes!
US rapper Lil Jon does not own a pub in Nottingham called the Robin Hood. So
5-3.
Yeah, 5-3, final score. It. Jamie takes this week.
So well that done. Means, does that mean we're all square in Sid's last play then?
I'm not going to lie, I can't remember.
Yeah, I think
we're 2-all.
Yeah, I think
two all.
We are.
Fantastic stuff.
Get in.
Well, all there right, is a nice bar in Nottingham called the Boiler Room. If we could go on an away day, I'd treat you to a round.
Mate, you've been there as well. You didn't know all these things. What's the matter with you?
Well, I was hoping for a question on the boiler room. It's basically you go in and the front of it is it looks like a shop that sells boilers and washing machines. And then they take you through the back of it as a bar. It's well cool.
Oh.
That would have been so niche.
But there we are. Never mind. You didn't ask me about the boiler room. I could have told you all about it.
No, well, just hard luck, eh? I could have asked you about Europe's largest sundial, which is in Nottingham, but I didn't.
Oh, that's very niche as well.
Yeah, very niche.
Good game, Sid. Made even better by the fact that I won it. So,
well done.
So that brings us to the end of the podcast. Been a good round. Been an interesting round four of the championship. I've certainly enjoyed watching it, reporting on it, talking about it. It's been an entertaining weekend. Listeners, please do go and give us a follow, retweet some of our posts, start sharing the love about the podcast if you've enjoyed it. We're really keen to try and contribute to the championship and try and push the profile of it, elevate it a bit in the eyes of the RFU, and we can only really do that with your support. So it's at changingroom_4 on Twitter and the same on Instagram. So please do go and give us a follow, give us a bit of a retweet. The bigger an audience we can reach, the better the content we can put out, hopefully.
Well, I don't know. He's us through.
The harder we'll try.
Yeah.
Tell your mates to come and have a listen. It'd be we'd absolutely love you for it. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening this week. It remains to be seen if we'll put another podcast out over Easter. But certainly come back and join us again for round five, when we will definitely be doing another one of these. So it just remains to say, Sid and Charles, thank you very much for your company. Hope you've enjoyed yourselves as well. Hope you've enjoyed all the action this weekend.
It's been all right.
If I don't see you over Easter, then have a great one. And to everyone listening, we'll see you back for round five. Take care.